bad idea. No,
are we going?
Yep.
All right, we're going.
I want to put a nail in the coffin on this Crash thing.
Do it.
On record.
So it is his girlfriend, but from an alternate dimension with less boobs and considerably more ass.
This isn't from like the Wikipedia page, is it?
It is. It's
not.
No, that's what I said describing it, because it is the same character, but from a different dimension.
All right.
Yeah, with less boobs and way more ass. It's not an opinion. It's the same character. It's just, you know. I'm playing Crash 4, and so she came up, and that's what I was talking about.
So there's a Crash multiverse, and it has sexy furries.
Yeah, that's basically it.
I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty sure the Crash universe has always had furries. There's just more of them now.
Yeah, there's just more detail.
All the fan games that ever get made.
More pixels, more polygons, so many more surfaces, and those surfaces are hella round.
The boobs are less triangular.
You know, that's really a matter of preference, all right?
I'm a long way from the PS1 days.
I suppose so.
I remember Lara Croft.
That's what I was thinking of.
we all were.
Just a boxy thing,
right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Hello. And welcome to the Qburn Games podcast. We're just like 2021, it's the year of the ass. I'm calling it out.
2020 was the year of the ass.
No, 2020 was the year of ass. Yeah. That's not the same thing.
The ass and of ass are
Donald Trump was the ass.
Sure, like the ass, comma, bad.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that in French, the sound, the onomatopoeia for a pig noise is groin, groin?
Perfect.
I don't know.
You didn't?
I did not.
Yeah. I'm glad I do know.
All right. Well, at some point, I'll introduce everybody. I don't know if any of this is staying in. It probably is. I haven't decided yet.
I hope
we don't usually do cold opens, but
we haven't
whatever.
Done cold opens in a while. We used to do them a lot.
Cold opens are great.
Anyway,
I don't know if that cold open was great, but cold opens
in general, I'm not opposed to them in principle for sure.
It was very funny.
Let me match names to voices, and then we'll continue on with whatever the fuck we're going to get up to. My name is Dustin Morbido. Joining me today, Lorraine Morbido is here.
It's true. I am.
She's talking about cartoon asses, just like everyone else. You know?
Oh, I am now? Okay, well, let me get out the resources first, then I'll talk to you about cartoon asses.
She's like, let me show
assets,
you the drawings to go
will.
With my fanfic.
Somebody has to illustrate Phil's fanzine, okay? We do it on
a
budget.
And the personas and everything we know.
God.
There's a thrilling industry of people and artists on the internet to take your money and make that a reality.
Oh, it's very true. I'm friends with a lot of them.
Joining us via the internet.
Wow.
To commission cartoon Tom Nooks with like all the junk hanging out of that.
Oh no.
What does he usually wear? Like an apron?
Gender swap.
An apron.
Tom
no,
Nook.
Dustin, if it's like, a gender swapped Tom Nook, unless it's transgender swapped Tom Nook, then there's
that
a difference.
That wasn't my intention.
There is a difference.
Phil McGrath is
misrepresent my fan fiction.
I had to reboot my own brain.
Dustin is just like he's crossing too many lines. You don't understand the vision.
I heard the Jeopardy music in my mind for about 4 seconds, and then I just had to say a name instead of letting it compute. Joining us
okay,
as well.
I don't know what my own fanfic is. Sorry, go on.
No, you're good. I just want to knock this out. Then we'll just keep the rabbit hole going. Joining
well.
Us as well, Wade McGrath is here.
My fanfic is Cloud Strife and Sephiroth sharing a body and becoming intimate with themselves.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's,
that makes
that's
me
fine.
Deeply uncomfortable.
What sword do they use?
I feel nothing. I've been on the internet too long. I don't,
Lorraine, was that a euphemism?
Yes. And also, no.
The answer is both.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say dual-wielding swords no, in both contexts.
It's the girth of the Buster Sword with the length of the Master Move. Come on.
Well, Kyle McGrath has just described his fanfiction, so again,
Buster
you know.
Mune or the Massa Sword.
I request to be uncredited on this episode, please.
This mystery man.
The podcaster formerly known as Kyle McGrath.
I don't think that works.
The artist formerly known as the podcaster known as Kyle McGrath.
Oh my gosh. And finally, joining us, Brian Loeffler's here.
I started all this nonsense by talking about Crash Bandicoot.
Sure.
This is your
fault.
I was
going to say, I came late to this. I still don't know what we're talking about.
You're
don't
a
worry
naughty
about
dog.
It.
Mike's not even in here anymore. No, that's Amanda. Okay.
Well, to some extent, here's a thing. Let's get into this, I guess, technically deeper, whatever.
And now,
because that's like a running thing. Like Banjo has like a kid sister, and Crash has like a kid sister, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And those two, like, they have innocence, right? Like they're just kind of right.
Tiny Kong in Donkey Kong 64.
Basically, they're
not candy.
Basically, they're like quote unquote virtue is protected because they're not sexualized in the same way as like a Candy Kong or a like. I don't know. It's just an observation, you know. Just some casual.
I mean, yes.
And one more little layer of sexism on top of that. just thinking about stuff. That's all.
And yeah,
tying virtue to sexuality is horrendous.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that's the thing that the game is suggesting in the subtext.
Right. Making boobs out of polygons is horrendous.
But also, those games were made in like the 90s. I don't even know how to judge them from a moral standpoint.
Sure. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not. It's more of an observation than anything. I'm not trying to cancel Crash Bandicoot. I think we've got bigger problems on our hands.
Right.
There's definitely like been social progress since then, and you know, game designers are more aware. but like at the same time, you know, it's like they made characters like Candy Kong and Tana was her name or whatever in fucking Crash Bandicoot, based on like the Jessica Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit and stuff like that.
I think her name was Humba Wumba. I'm like 90% sure. Banjo-Tooie, there is a sexy supposedly play on some kind of Native American woman who is a shaman. Mumbo Jumbo. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to fact check this right now, what her name
is. Please do. I need to know.
Lorraine's trying to win cancellation bingo over here.
Right.
Just making a full
line. I mean, yeah, like that's...
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. Her name is Humba Wumba, and she's...
Wow.
Yep. Thanks, Rare.
That's offensive on like a dozen different levels.
I don't think that would get made today.
She looks like what you would assume. Like, it's not. That's just
it's not
sexy
good.
Witch doctor. We get it.
Sure. I mean, right. Just speaking of like all that was the 90s, man.
I could send that to Discord.
Pocahontas was the hottest Disney princess, like with intent. Like that's just the way. That's just the way we were rolling, and you know the
just the way white imperialists.
Yeah, right.
Wanted.
The way people were doing
about,
it. And 1990,
like,
whatever.
She's got legs for about 1.5 kilometers.
There really is nothing whiter than turning Pocahontas into a sexy wave
right,
for
like
the largest corporation in
America. A 20-something, perfectly like symmetrical attractive woman.
There. I sent it to Discord.
Oh my god.
Alright. I guess I need to
I'll look at it later. I don't want to look at it right now.
It's as sexy as you can make a set of polygons on the N64, basically.
Yeah.
You know? She's still pretty square, but
that's a yikes.
The technology
for me
at the time.
Uh huh.
That is yikes, yes.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I can't tell which thing. Like, there's so many ways I want to pivot now, so many places I want to go. Most of which I'm like grossly incapable of. Like, I don't know,
Brian. What have you done to us?
I don't know.
Stay on this
chaotic evil.
Oh, should I just step in it? Should I just like?
Sure, let's do it.
Veer out of my lane, and then you can like hip check me back into it.
Sure.
Okay, I'll let you.
No.
I'll let you be my guide, and like, so I've been thinking about.
Oh my god.
It's not going to be bad. At least I hope not.
I'm really scared of where this is going.
One hand on the wheel, one hand
it's
on
just,
the gun.
I just
right
don't
want to.
No, it's not like there's no ill intent. I just don't want to misrepresent.
Well, yeah, that was the third hand, like the proverbial like invisible hand. Come on.
Invisible hand of the crotch.
As we've like talked about, like LeBron James and Space Jam, just like for funsies, because that whole trailer came out and is a fucking riot of a shit show or whatever. That's got me thinking about sports in general. Uh-oh. And then when we were talking about Lorraine and I, just specifically, just on and off.
Who?
We had been talking about, I forget which day it came up, but it was...
Time doesn't
which
matter
state
anymore.
Is the shittiest? Is Arkansas? Whichever state was most recently passed the most transgressive...
Mm-hmm.
Transgender.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. So they it got vetoed, and then,
but then the legislature
overrode the veto.
Right. They went down to pass it anyway.
Yeah.
So that's been on my mind a lot lately. I keep rolling around the
the
fucking
audacity.
See,
of this bitch.
I don't even know how to describe it because I would call it a tempest in a teacup because from like the conservative perspective, that's what it is. Like they don't give a shit. They don't really care.
No.
Right.
Like they, like I truly believe that people on the conservative side don't really think this is a problem, but it is a culture war that they can stoke. So
To what extent are you saying people on that side? Because the layperson does think that it's like an abomination, an affront to God that trans people exist. Say. But I don't know the extent to which like conservative lawmakers
that's kind of where I'm at. I think the people passing these laws more often than not kind of couldn't give a shit one way or another, but they know that it is a thing that they can offer people
it's
up
a hot button issue.
With grievance in their hearts. Without giving them, you know, real things in life that matter, like good jobs and healthcare and shit like that.
And only stokes the flame under the ass of their base, and that's one of the biggest things.
Basically, I guess what I'm saying
They're stirring the pot because they can.
The more time that goes by, I still don't think conservatives at this point really believe in anything.
That's what I was going to say.
Other than
conservatives on every issue.
Other than jingling people's chains.
That is completely accurate. I mean, they believe in a very one-sided picture of like four different key virtues that they have, and they refuse to accept the notion that they're on the wrong side of any of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like personal responsibility is a fucking great one where they will refuse to accept any personal responsibility for their own actions, but they will demand it of everyone else.
I don't even know if they believe in that anymore. I kind of think the only thing they believe in is enriching themselves, the politicians, not the party, and definitely not the people, and power. I don't even know if they believe literally anything anymore.
I was going to say
it's just a game to win elections.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's a very big. It's an us versus them on every platform at all times. Like, if you're not with us, you're against us. Like, get with the program, drink the Kool-Aid, all that shit. But the Kool-Aid is literally just water. Like, there's nothing in it because they have nothing. They're not standing for anything but themselves.
Republican lawmakers have recently said brazenly, like, we don't want big government except when we're in power.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I think that's just the perfect example of they don't actually care about anything.
Lorraine, to segue off of the thing you just said, because that's actually where I was kind of trying to lead this all, and you kind of teed me up in a way now I can try to finish my thought. Was that, like, I do think the way that they've drawn people in, this is the thought that I've landed on after just thinking about, like, your experiences with sports and as a kid and my experiences with just, like,
still talking about sports.
Competition generally, and hearing some people who've been affected by this shit, like, hearing, hearing testimonials from transgender kids and stuff who are affected by specifically the sports nature of this bullshit, because the legislation's all over the place. The thing in Arkansas was even way more transgressive than that, and they're like, oh, we just want you to, you know,
rat
not have healthcare
kids,
of any kind, so
turn your kids over for any like non-conforming things.
I feel like that level of oppression doesn't gain that much traction with the general public. I do worry that they've gained some amount of action with the like trans kids in sports thing, and the reason I think they have been able to do that is because that does kind of coincide with the last bastion of kind of like what Lorraine was saying. That I think this trickles down to the American public as a whole right now, that I hope like we can reel back from to some extent, that like if conservatives believe anything, it's that at this point is that the only thing that matters is winning. And that plays right down even technically to the sports thing too, because I think like the way that they've gotten regular people up into this thing is that like, and I don't have the data to know one way or another where other trans athletes have an advantage or disadvantage, or they're neutral with their cisgender counterparts. But my argument would be that regardless of that, like, is that the most important thing?
Yes.
Is it the most important thing about all this? Who wins the most?
Mm-hmm.
because when you hear those kids tell it, which makes sense, because that's how that stuff's always been for me. Like, isn't it more important to participate, to like self, to, you know, to judge your own progress against
on your
yourself
own merit, yeah.
And not like the majority of, you know, 98% of kids who play high school sports are never going to play them again. Like, they'll either play them very casually or not at all.
Can confirm.
Like people aren't going, like, it's not like 50-50 half of these kids are going to the NBA and half of them are going to work at, you know, McDonald's or whatever. Like,
well, and conservatives wildly overestimate the extent to which even if people did get a substantial advantage, they would try to pretend to be trans to
that's
just straight up bullshit like that, and that's very easy to like if you ask it,
and that's just gross propaganda.
If you ask a transgender person, is it harder to be a transgender person in life, or is it harder to like win at a sport at a low level? Just like all those arguments of is just that's so stupid. And so
if you think about it though,
oh my god,
they're looking at it through the lens of how they think, if you like, because they do like sneaky ass stupid shit like that all the time. So they're just projecting like, oh, do this.
Well,
we do this as a group. So they must be doing it too, because that's how people think. And
on the same note, it's exactly the same as their arguments against transsexual people in regards to like people entering into bathrooms they don't belong and doing perverted things, because Republican lawmakers are like 10 times as likely as random people in the public to commit those crimes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that it is an actual stat that more people have been arrested for illicit bathroom activities than more Republican lawmakers have been arrested than transgender.
Sure.
People.
Well,
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, astronomically.
That's the thing about that was always bullshit. Like, it's still illegal to like go in a bathroom and misbehave in any manner that is considered like aggressive or assault or whatever. So like to single out transgender people is a pointless, it's just pointless rallying of people's fears of people who are different. Like, basically,
it's not a good faith argument in any way.
Yeah.
Right. Honestly, if Republicans or conservative lawmakers looked at any statistic with any honesty and made any good faith arguments, this wouldn't even be a conversation. And that's just the fact of the matter. Is like, in most cases, the conservatives, especially in America, being as extremely far right and regressive as they are, do not make good faith arguments. Like, full stop.
Bold of you to assume they'll trust any statistic ever.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That like nothing they do is in good faith. So it's hard to operate in any reasonable way in communication.
But anyway, just hearing, because again, that's the same thing, right? It's like when you're, regardless of what is happening in your life, when you're going through a rough patch, sometimes you just need any little thing to clamber onto to kind of keep yourself, you know, afloat.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of those kids, it could have been sports.
Now it's not.
And now it's going to be for way less of them. Or if they do still get in, then now they've introduced this toxic, you know, side-eyeing of everybody who might be transgender, who is looking into getting it. Like, it's going to discourage people from even trying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just really, that is just like, it has turned my stomach like a few degrees over the last couple weeks. I just keep feeling worse and worse about it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Sorry. So I was going to say, another question I have is, of the already significantly small number of transgender people that are, you know, actively in that transition, making that change in their life, how many of them are actually actively looking to participate in sports? And like, you know, like,
right,
it's like a percent of a percent.
I was gonna say it's a non-zero number, but I doubt it's most of them.
Yeah,
it's a medical transition. It's a process. Like, your body's already undergoing a lot of changes through puberty. And then if you're at like the level that they're kind of targeting, which is, I believe most of those bills are aimed at 21 and below.
Right. It's kids.
It's kids.
Right. It's
not like they're already undergoing so much, like with like any cis, like actual like body chemistry changes with that age, and introducing like potentially like hormones, like different hormones than what their body was already producing. Like, who, like, you're gonna feel like shit. I felt like shit in high school going through all that. Like, why would you, like, unless you were like extremely passionate, you're not gonna be doing that, most likely. I can't speak for everyone, but most likely.
I mean, realistically, it's like, you know, in most cases, from my understanding, it's they don't even start the process until they're already an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because of like how uncomfortable they are in their bodies, they don't want to, you know, be in a locker room or participate in like physical contact with people in any way like that. It's just, you know, it's hard for me to imagine that there's a large enough number of people that want to be in this, like, in this like laser pointed, like targeted legislation that's obviously clearly bigoted, like that are gonna be in there that, like, you're talking about, you know, probably a couple dozen people in Arkansas.
I do want to
see Kansas because
we should call them Arkansas because they don't deserve our fucking respect.
I think Lorraine is about to say a thing that I was thinking about saying, but go for it.
I do want to suffix a lot of this conversation with none of us can really speak from experience.
That.
We are all cisgendered and cannot necessarily speak to an actual representation of the transitional process.
Yeah. Like, and that's more of what I was getting at.
Like, I've got two very good friends, one of whom I've known my entire life, and I've listened to a lot of their stories about taking tea and like them and their now husband. They got married last year, which unfortunately I could not attend because things were on fire, but or really celebrate with them at all, which is unfortunate. But listening to like their stories and seeing stuff from them has actually like it's been extremely I don't want to say eye-opening, but just educational. It's something I would not have experienced. And while I still can't really speak to it, obviously, because I have not done it myself, I just wanted to throw that out there because it's we've done stuff
definitely.
Like this before where we run our mouths a little bit, not in like a bad way, just in a not as full of a picture way
that
we
that's
could
what
give.
I meant when I was like leading into this with like the slightest of trepidations is because like I know that I'm not the person to be speaking for people
absolutely
in these
not.
Communities.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a frustrating thing to see anyone go mm-hmm. through something so shitty. So I at least wanted to, like, vocalize my support and pontificate on it a little bit. And kind of the last part that I'll sort of tie into, like, my own internal thought process. And you go to all the stupid fucking asinine reasons that people are getting into all this shit in the first place is, like... And because it ties into game stuff, too. So now we'll bring it full circle to, you know, everything. But, like, in practice, when you take the human element out of it, which is, you know, nearly impossible, because it's really just an attack on people on an individual level.
Oh,
but,
absolutely.
But if you try to, what's really happening is a debate about game balance. Like, and again, without much data, because people, like I said, there's just not a ton of research about, you know, transgender people versus their cisgender counterparts in sports in general. But again, the thing beyond that is, like... In almost all sports, we don't subdivide people based on innate physical ability, really. Like, the closest you get is in, like, boxing, right? Where, like, you don't...
Weight classes.
Right, like...
Wrestling weight classes.
Right, boxing or wrestling. Like, you don't have a 300-pound, like, 6'5" dude fight
a
like,
twink.
Right, a 180, like, 5'8". Like, they're in different weight classes. But, like... But in baseball, it's not like... Like, you have a short guy will play on the field with, you know, someone who's, like, a good 10 inches taller than them or whatever. Like, there's not, like, they don't subdivide in that way in team sports.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same thing. Like, it's...
It's the same general argument,
like,
I would say.
For people who are, like, who are designated, like, a gender at birth, and then, you know... If you're just talking about women's sports, even, like, some women will just have... Some people
are just more
gendered
like,
as women will have, you know, they'll be taller. They'll have more testosterone, maybe, than other women. So if you're going to go down this rabbit hole, like, at what point does it end? Like, what...
Yeah.
And that, again, that's not really their argument. Like,
no,
that's
it's
not,
absolutely not.
It's not, like, reforming sports to, quote-unquote, be more fair, which like, I don't know at that point. What the, like, if
I mean,
that's a good idea.
You're
or
completely
not.
Right. The statistics, and this is something I've looked into
lay the knowledge.
Both
Let's
sports
go.
And intellectual pursuits. There's more difference within gender than between gender on all levels. So, like, you know, the worst participant, the worst male participant in baseball is always going to be worse than, you know, a mediocre female participant in baseball.
Yeah.
But, like, you know.
And just, like, Michael Phelps was one of the reasons he was so amazing at swimming was just because his body was crazy. Like, it was, he just happened to, like, you know, the chemistry that made him up grew his body into a specific way where his legs were really long and just the right way and his arms were really long and just the right way and his, you know, his chest was a certain shape or whatever. And that kind of stuff is, like I said, if that was the argument, then, like, then that's the argument you should be have, which is really not the argument that anyone is having. Like, that's not the thing.
But it's also, maybe it's not an argument we should be having because that's, like...
Well, that's what I'm
like,
saying, and I think you need
some,
to do.
Like,
I think you need to do the opposite,
here,
right?
Like, this is.
I
like,
think that even if the, I think that people are taking the stuff too seriously, in that, like, sports is at minimum as much a spectacle as it is, like, a quote unquote serious pursuit. Like, I think the gaps in that are fine for the reason you just stated, Lorraine. I think it is dangerous to try to subcategorize people. down to the, the milliliters fucking, of testosterone or whatever in their system.
The gene string, the DNA strands.
At that point, you're like you're dehumanizing people to such a degree that like...
No, thank you.
Like, basically, I guess I'm saying I think it's fine if sports are imbalanced because the cost of trying to do the other thing is perhaps a little too high to pay.
Well, and I definitely... So, like, just in the... Because we're talking about this, I was looking into... Fallon Fox, the MMA fighter who has transitioned, and like, because you know, I saw some people bitching about just one of her fights. Like, apparently she cracked an opponent's skull. Ooh. You know, from what I understand, but it's like, you know, she has a loss. She's in the same weight class as everyone else. It's like she just cracked open someone's skull. That shit happens in fights, you know? It's not like...
Sometimes you crack a skull, sometimes you bite an ear, like...
Yeah, exactly. You get like, you know, Mike Tyson, whatever. But the big thing is just like, you know, as long as it's, you know, they're more or less equal in their weight and everything, then it... And they lost, you know, a match before. So it's not like they totally outclass everyone that's there. It's, you know, that's evidence of more equality in the system than, you know, than not.
Yeah. More than anything, I just, like I said, it's been a combination of like, it's disheartening on the side of just like seeing that discrimination and that disregard for people's well-being. And then it's just been like interesting to me watching people try to justify it, basically. Like I said, the way that people who are passing these laws and getting this into the conversation have been able to deputize at least, you know, a somewhat significant number of regular ass people with not necessarily any dog in the fight. Yeah, it's just got me thinking about sports and balance and all that stuff, and it's just, like I said, it's just really weird to me that like
we have very different definitions of the word interesting, Dustin.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, it's just like game balance. It's like everything else. It's just, I don't know. I find it fascinating.
I find it horrifying.
But like I said, it's just, I don't know, man. It's crazy. It's
fucked up. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right. It's fucked up.
Fucking fucked up.
More than
up.
Anything.
Yeah, I mean, anything. The real takeaway is that anyone that, like, is going to make that kind of archaic legislation shouldn't be writing legislation. Just because.
Well, good luck with that.
I mean,
vote.
Vote.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone else, go vote. Mm-hmm. Go vote for people that aren't fucking, like, brainstop.
I'm not moving to Arkansas.
Never.
And also, right, like continue putting pressure on people who you can't necessarily vote for, because that was the other thing. And that other shitty bill did pass. Like you said, they passed it back through the legislature after it got vetoed. But it was true that, whatever the fuck his stupid shitty name was, the governor of Arkansas. The only reason he did veto that bill originally was, it wasn't because he was against denying trans people the right to medical treatment. It was because the optics of, he basically just didn't want Arkansas to be singled out as the single most transgender exclusive state in the union.
He's
like, well, I don't want to be at the top of the prejudice lists, but like, you know, I'll take like a number five.
The rest of the legislature was like, no.
No, we're going to be right.
They wanted to win.
We're number one.
They wanted the W.
Everybody held up their foam fingers and, denied people the right to safety and security.
Great.
They're like, you know what? Just like, Arkansas has got to be number one in the world at something. So might as well be number one in the world at
transphobia.
Trans bigotry.
I don't know, day drinking, probably.
Yeah, there's plenty of other bad metrics that they're already leading the world in.
I mean, America leads the world in obesity and, like, I think heart failure.
Arkansas leads of America.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, COVID rates and stuff like that. To that end, Michigan's been fucking up.
Yeah, we're not doing so hot these days.
Michiganders.
You say we, but really we mean, you know, the rural outskirts.
you know what we mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
The unvaccinated masses.
Yeah, it's hard to say. And that's its own can of worms, because that's still a combination of government restrictions loosening and just like some regular people just being more fast and loose in general, and the fact that now that the more contagious variants are the dominant variants, so numbers were going to go up a little anyway until, like, we hopefully reach critical mass on the number of people who have been vaccinated, but
thanks to the Republican state legislature for you know, taking away Whitmer's emergency powers.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for that.
A plus.
Good job. So proud.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, anyone that's worth their salt and has any understanding of the world, they just, they're still staying home, and we're just going to be increasingly frustrated until we're all vaccinated, and then we can go out, and people, the people that aren't, are just going to keep just getting fucking hospitalized and have millions of dollars of hospital bills.
Fuck, a lot of funerals to crash this year.
Jesus.
Something like that.
A little darker than I was going, but yes.
Well, here's the other thing I was thinking, and again, this is like, just like, I'll just pass the opportunity around the room if anyone wants to voice anything now, but I'll continue to offer opportunities for anyone who feels like jumping in. I'm just like, how's everybody doing? How are y'all hanging in there? Because it's been a weird couple of weeks for me, I'm not going to lie. The last week or two have been, like, just real strange mental health-wise.
But things are better. Like, things were worse a year ago. Now they're better. Yeah.
That's true. Like, that's the thing about it, is like, that's, you're so right. That is absolutely true.
On like macro level, though.
Yeah, well, and yet I still can't shake the, like, internally, I can't shake the, like, the malaise is the perfect word for it.
Right now, your body's in
maybe it's
such
more
perpetual fight or flight mode that, like,
yeah, it's something like
stress,
that.
Your cortisol cannot, like, it doesn't know how to balance itself right now. So even when things are going well, you are still gonna feel like shit.
I think like if you want to get fancy words involved, I think I'm somewhere on the, like, between a malaise and like an ennui. Because like at the end of the day,
Melania Wee.
All right, I got an enhanced malaise for everyone. It's Malayanaise.
Only for white people.
Our mother was going to name her next born on we if she and Evan had had a child.
Good. Good.
I'm kind of right there with you, Dustin. So, like, Amanda and I got drunk a few weeks ago, like, and I got really drunk. And so because of just the way that my personal existence is, I've had to build up, I've built up emotional walls to not have to deal with anything that I, you know, will have to eventually.
Just and, like my life.
Mm-hmm. And getting drunk took those walls down. So I've been dealing with feelings and
I'm so sorry.
Memories that I have been deliberately blocking for a while.
That's awesome. And go ahead.
No, it's not awesome. This is terrible. No, but I mean,
it is better than, well, yes.
Yes.
That. So let me expand a little bit, because it's like one of those things that I was going to tackle it when I was ready for it.
Sure. You know, that's
Because I've been, for the better part of my adult life, you know, I've been kind of living my life in survival mode for about 12 years, 13 years. So I'm just like, I'm finally in a spot that I shouldn't be in that, but COVID's kind of extended that.
Mm.
And so it's like, you know, hopefully once COVID's over and I can, you know, budget the money to see a therapist,
right,
then I can actually resolve everything. But it's kind of like all that shit is, it's present before it should be. And that's what the problem is. So I've been like battling with that and having weird anxiety that I don't normally have. And other depressive episodes. Because like processing shit that you're not ready to or don't want to process is not a good thing to go through, especially not without fun, you know, some professional assistance.
Yeah, so. I agree. And that's the thing. It, like, I feel the exact same way. And it's just, you know, it's one more failing of America or whatever.
Yeah, our system.
But like,
I can't just go, all right, well, let me get a few sessions in through telemedicine, through my state sponsored insurance that'll be covered. And I don't have to worry about the cost. I just have to schedule time.
Right.
And I could go, I mean, I could just go to fucking like Sweden or Finland and then do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I would have liked to have, you know, in a world where where that kind of treatment was more accessible, I would have liked to have talked to somebody in a professional sense about my mental health at some point over the last 12 months. But I'm in the right combination of cheap and stubborn. Like, I can't afford to, like, I theoretically we could afford it, but like in practice, like, I can't afford to lay down hundreds of dollars for a few hours of somebody's time.
It's really hard to justify.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. And you know, it's broken down in our relationships too, where, and I think there's good and bad to that, because, like, you know, Lorraine and I have had a couple of extended heart-to-hearts,
therapize each other on the most.
Couple of tear-jerking, like, sometimes you just gotta cry it out or whatever.
Sometimes you just gotta fucking cry, man.
And when you're in, like, a relationship with somebody where you're, when you're living with them, especially in the context like this, where everybody's, where you're just, like, huddled down in the bunker or whatever. Like, I think, I just think it's a fine line, because on the one hand, it's really awesome to be able to confide in somebody and, like, vent a little, but on the other, you know, you don't want to overburden them with your own shit, and at the same time, if you don't do it at all, eventually you're gonna start build, just lashing out in them in ways that you don't intend, which, like, you know, doing the dishes and you drop a thing and break something and you go fucking shit and you just, like, lose your mind and they're like, what's wrong? And you're like, I don't know. I'm just really upset right now and I don't know why.
Yeah, no, it's because it's funny because, like, because during the week I had spoke with my mom and I asked her, like, how do you deal with having lived in survival mode most of your life? And then she was like, talk to a therapist.
Gee, thanks,
in
Mom.
In so many words. She was a lot more, you know, tender and, like,
eloquent about it,
you know, detailed about it. But, like, that was what it sums up to. And that, at a point she was like, well, can't you talk to your friends about it a little bit? And maybe that can help you work through it on your own as you're discussing it. And I was like, yeah, but that's not their job.
Right. There's two things wrong with it. Like, you don't want to overburden people who that's not their job, but also they're not as good at it because that's not their job.
Because they're not 100%.
I'm no professional.
It's not their job, and it's not their job. So it makes it difficult
to try my best.
Do it.
Yeah. It is really valuable to have someone that you can confide in about important issues like that. And it's very important, especially right now, that that person is not a replacement for a therapist. No.
Yeah, and I think stuff like this, like what we're doing now, is like the closest you can get. Like, it's a good middle ground of just, like, just to having a sit down with, you know, anybody in your life and just being like, hey, you know, I've been better. And you don't need to tell people though, like, down to the minute detail, everything that's been, you know, wrong in your mental state for the last 2 months or whatever. But at the same time, you don't want to. I do think it's dangerous to, like I said, to just say that, like, no, everything's fine. I'm doing awesome.
Yeah.
And, like, everything's totally good. Don't worry about it.
I mean, that's definitely been, like, for me personally, that was always that's always been my go-to. You want to talk about emotional walls, Brian? Oh, boy. I got, like, a labyrinth over here. Like,
your situation has a different, I mean,
it's a different cadence.
Emotional walls are emotional walls, but the cause of yours is different.
Yeah, because it was just,
we've all got our,
it was always easier to just, like, to not separate yourself from the thing, like, just don't express, don't emote, because that's always going to, that backlash is coming. You look at someone wrong and you're going to get yelled at, essentially.
Right.
And, like, it's still my knee jerk, even today. Like, I try so hard to just not reveal anything, to keep my hands, like, hand completely hidden.
Don't rock the boat.
Yeah. And, like, that, I know when I'm doing it 100% of the time, no matter who I'm with, I'm like, oh, well, like, sometimes it's better than others. Like, if it's just, like, a casual acquaintance, like, you're not just going to, like, dump that shit on everyone.
Get on them.
But one time it was really noticeable that I didn't have control was, this was back in, like, February or something like that, when more stuff was happening with my sister, and one of our friends had just gotten, like, the same day, he had gotten hospitalized, and I was just like, I was in such a funk at work. I was just like trying to go through my day just like usual. And my one coworker, she comes over to me. She's like, are you okay? Cause you seem like way off today. Cause normally, like, it was still the off season. So it still is for like 3 more days. And we're just like, it's just the 5 of us in the shop. So it's generally pretty quiet. And sometimes we're like chatting or whatever. But I hadn't said a word in like probably hours at that point. And she like, and then I cracked. I just kind of like laid everything out because I don't talk that much about like the stuff that's been going on with my sister there because it's not a thing I want to necessarily share with everyone. Y'all know what I'm talking about, so I'm not going to go into details here. Mm-hmm. Anyone who knows me on that level knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
And I unloaded and I did feel a little bit better, but now I also like, I can tell when she knows that I'm not necessarily feeling good now. And I think part of it is the mask because I can't like hide the rest of my expression. You're just seeing my eyes and you can't see the like fake smile that I'm wearing if I have to wear a fake smile in public. And I don't know.
People who have either experienced or are very familiar with the 1,000-yard stare can tell it immediately.
Sure, yeah.
It's real easy to see when you know what it is.
Right
on. Brian's taking a little knee. That's perfect. He can duck back in when he's ready. But yeah, it's just been a weird, and one of the reasons, like, I have multiple barometers at this point to gauge my own like, I guess my own personal, just like, how stable am I feeling at any given moment? And in the last week specifically, one of them that was like setting off alarm bells was Destiny, because that's like, it is one of my like, when I find myself like preternaturally annoyed with everything in this stupid fucking video game, right. It's not because of the video game. It's because just I'm generally a little more on edge than I usually am. Like, I just want this one thing to be frictionless. I just want to stomp this guy's face in and knock a team shot every life, and it's not happening.
Curb stomp this man.
Just want an adept palindrome with quick draw for 2 weeks before it gets nerfed.
Another that's right. Fucking meatball.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how things go. Like I said, it's just been you're totally right though, Wade. It is just the fact that we're all, both coping with some level of like the crisis that has happened to us and waiting on pins and needles to see how much more of the crisis still lies ahead. Cause the hope is still that we're at the tail end, but that's not a certainty. Like, it's just, and that's the part that I think keeps creeping up in the back of my mind that like, man, I hope things are like even better. I hope I can like go to places by like summer. I just hope people are not dying anymore in significant numbers in at least this country, you know, in a couple months. And we'll find out together. Like, we'll see.
Yay.
But it's
in all likelihood, at the very least, we will be able to hang out in regular fashion again.
Yeah, and that,
pretty
yeah,
soon,
yeah, I'll,
like
right,
within
I'll be,
a month or
yeah,
so.
I'll be real comfortable.
Just all be
yeah, I'll be real comfortable doing that after everybody's gotten all their shots or whatever.
Yeah,
and
of course,
be,
I'm losing all my weekends.
That'll
now.
Be real nice for
I'm getting
sure.
my Johnson & Johnson tomorrow.
Oh,
yeah, we're getting,
I don't know what
we're
getting.
Getting a shot
yeah,
tomorrow.
We're
I'm still
shot.
Not sure which vaccine we're going to get, but whatever they put in my arm, I'm going to take
I've
it.
I've heard...
Take two shots at once and be done.
Right. One in each arm. I got two arms. Let's go.
I think it's going to be Moderna. That's what a handful of weeks ago, a bunch of my coworkers went
just happened
to
get
this
when
place
they went
specifically
to that
and yeah. got Moderna. So we'll see.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
I mean, I'm not.
Oh, I mean, I am. I just
I mean, I am,
have
but
it
like,
in me.
Dustin, you are not a person who faints when you get your blood drawn a lot.
I
so
know.
So I am
I know.
Very nervous about that. I'm exceptionally anxious right now.
I'll be there with you.
Lorraine,
I'm
going to
be alone.
Lorraine, I'm with you on this. The last time I went to the doctor, I passed out when I had blood drawn. So, yeah.
I pass
know about
out.
You guys.
Like,
I feel like vaccines are nowhere near as bad as getting your blood
I
drawn.
I hope not. It's been,
I didn't even feel it.
I couldn't even tell you when the last time
either.
I got a vaccine was.
It really,
I was a child.
It really depends on how good they are at it. Because, like you said, I that one time,
good.
Like, if they can find a vein or whatever on the first shot, you know, that's one thing. But, it, like, I don't know that it's that difficult. Like, I can't remember any time I was vaccinated. Like, it happened when I was young enough. Like,
exactly.
I don't think I've had a vaccine in adulthood. Like, I got
not
a flu
exactly
shot.
A vaccine, but I was getting B12 shots from the doctor at the same time, and like, yeah, those were nothing compared to the blood draw.
Yeah, I did get a flu shot the last time.
Blood here.
The last
good.
Time I
yeah.
went to the doctor, I got
blood.
A flu shot, and it was much more frictionless than getting your blood
so.
Drawn. Like, it was just like,
it's
boop.
Been a long time since I've had a shot, Dustin.
Like, go touch the tip of a knife, and that's gonna hurt more than the shot does.
Yeah, I'm with Kyle. I literally didn't know when my shot had
good.
Been administered. Right, she was like, okay, you can leave. And I was like, what? Like,
all right, get out of here.
You had to double check. You're like, are you sure you pricked me? Because, like, I don't want to leave here without the juice. Like,
right.
You better have gotten it all. Like, give me every drop.
Pretty much everything medical makes me exceptionally anxious, so I'm not going to be fair. Okay.
I mean, yeah, there's that.
I'm not.
And I'm the same way for the anxiety leading up to it. Like, it doesn't feel good to be waiting for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just like I said. I think it's the whole, and I do think ennui might be like the more perfect word to describe it for me personally. Because it is a good. It's a word that, like, you know, I'm surprised there's not a Wes Anderson movie titled Ennui. But in the very real sense, we've talked about this before, like, you know, on a personal level, we haven't suffered very greatly from coronavirus, other than the things that everybody's dealing with.
Yeah, but nothing, like, specific or unique, necessarily.
But I do think, the immensity of how many people it has affected, to what degree, has really crept up on me in the last couple of months, too. Like,
right.
I've been reading about people talking about, you know, putting up memorials and stuff, like, lasting monuments to all the suffering that's gone through and all the people that we've lost collectively. And, like, I really think they should do something like that in, you know, as many places as they could pull it off. Because, like it made me think back to the, just again, just how weird people are. Not even just America in this case, but humans in general. Of, like, Lorraine, you went to, one of those times we went to New York, we went to the September 11th Museum, right?
We've been multiple times, yes.
Yeah. And you look at that thing, and it's nuts. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be there, but that is a monument to, you know, 5,000 dead, give or take. And it's a very moving, very, you know, quiet,
stoic, very calm,
very contemplative
serene
thing that they made for that level of human suffering. And just in America alone, we're at like 100 times that and counting. Mm-hmm. The coronavirus, and it's never going to get the same kind of reverence, just because it's not like an enemy. it's not easy to paint winners and losers when it's
the terrible irony is that this was preventable. And that
can't
go to war with coronavirus and take their oil.
And on the flip side, like, there's no, you know, when coronavirus is done, everybody, like, when we've quote-unquote dealt with coronavirus, everybody benefits. And the other thing that always loomed over me with the 9/11 memorial is that, like, the aftermath of that was just more human suffering on people who weren't Americans.
Ongoing human suffering, even.
But again, that's not even an American problem, necessarily. That's just, like, a human problem. Like, our monkey brains are just too wired to the way we stage conflicts in our own head and write narratives and shit.
Us versus them.
It's just, yeah.
I think a lot of it is even different than that. It's the nature of the conflict. Mm. Like, it was literally a giant explosion.
Sure.
And that's the thing that people, like, it happens instantly, and it's flashy, and it's scary, and it's unknown, and it's not common. And that's, all of that is, like, totally the opposite of what is happening here.
Yeah.
In that, it's just people getting sick.
Yeah, it's
and
slow,
we have people getting
it's
sick
quiet
all the time, and it's slow, it's not sexy, it's not interesting.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're, like, actually invested in the science of it and things like that.
Right.
Or interesting.
But yeah, you're right. You can't sum it up with, like, one or two really shocking photographs. Like, yeah, you're totally right.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just leads to disinterest, or at least less interest.
Yeah. And
the numbers don't matter.
Right.
To people.
And some level of it goes back to, like, the, when you talk about the anti-Asian hate, like, that is the thing that makes a tie into 9/11 for me in spades, where, like, that's the one thing that has played through, where, like, you know, the other thing about it, like, you, when you read about, like, violence is kind of re-erupting in Northern Ireland again, as the UK continues to fuck itself into the dirt with the fallout of, like, the post-Brexit nightmare. But people aren't, like, shocked by it. Like, it's not like, people don't get taken aback when it's, like, more racially homogenous people hurting or killing slightly more racially homogenous people. But when it's somebody on the brown spectrum getting killed by or killing somebody on the white spectrum, then all of a sudden, like Lorraine said, it's much more tribal, much more, like, it just, people give a shit more. And it's, you know, I don't know what to do about that. But it's a thing, like, it's an observation you can make about human beings.
It sucks.
And that
humans
has been
fucking
true throughout
suck.
All of human history.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just a lot to think about. But yeah, I really hope that they, like, the thing I had read recently is that, like, oh god, I forget its name, but there's like a there's an island off it's I think it's like a mile off of Brooklyn or the Bronx or whatever in New York that is basically like it's been a city-run cemetery where they just if you can't afford a personal burial or a plot, they'll just take people in mass from the city and bury them there.
That's terrifying.
Well, I mean, but that's the other thing is like and like you know talking about death is never easy. But on the one hand, I found it kind of uplifting because like I kind of think that's how all burials should be. Like I feel like singling people out to like individual. Like,
I mean, memorializing the dead is weird. Like the way that we do it with like our sprawling cemeteries and
Just like the size of your monument is based on your checkbook, just like every other fucking thing. Like if you're a rich former car executive, like the Dodge brothers or whatever, you get to build a pyramid and then put your corpse inside it.
As you do.
Yeah, that's weird as fuck.
But yeah, like the
also a thing that's been true for all of human history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I found something that like there's a fairness to like mass burials of people who have suffered like that. And the thing that like I said was more uplifting to me is that they were talking about putting a COVID monument specifically there.
Okay,
I hope they do it because that'd be like you know, it's not easy. It's not gonna be easy for people to visit their loved ones there anyway. Like because there's this whole other thing about they're trying to transition control of it from I think it's controlled by like. There was some weird bureaucracy where it was controlled by the corrections department, and now they're trying to transition to Parks and Recreation in New York, which controls the other cemeteries in the city limits. And then they're going to try to give people more access with like more ferry service and stuff. Because that thing, like, you can't go to it unless you have a boat.
Yeah,
like it's an island; right, you can't just walk over there.
But I wanna.
But yeah, I would love it if they did that for the people who have suffered loss in that way, and all over the country. Mm-hmm. Like you want to talk about taking down Confederate monuments? I got plenty of things we could put in their place. But yeah, it's just been, yeah, I think at the, like everybody is really, myself included, like I'm going to be fucking out of my mind excited the next time we just hang out together inside a building and just kind of chill for a little bit. It's going to be awesome.
Play a board game.
Yeah.
I just want to like, I want to just like hug people again.
Yeah. I gave my mom a hug recently cause after she got vaccinated and it felt great. I hadn't hugged her in months.
Yeah.
But I was like, all right, you've gotten a shot. I'm going to hug you now.
Yeah, we did that with my, on Easter, we were all masked and stuff and we're outside anyway, but like, I got to hug my grandparents for like a brief moment in time for the first time in over a year and a half or so, give or take. And that was nice.
Yeah. So like I said, on a personal level, I think there's going to be a lot of little relief in the near term, but like, I think as a society, as a world, it's going to take some time to process. And again, like for the kids who are growing up, like if you're 20 now, you know, you didn't live through 9/11 really, like, so you didn't even like, we've been hit a couple times with like weird, like epic level tragedies. So, you know, it's just a...
Your trauma is still valid, though.
Weird couple decades.
You don't have to live through 9/11 to...
No,
like,
no, no, you're totally right.
I was going to say the same thing on a broader scale.
Yeah.
Like, tragedy. Even for, like, right now, if you feel like you haven't been personally afflicted that heavily by COVID, that doesn't mean that you aren't entitled to be unhappy, just in general, because everything else that's happening seeps in, even if your life has been pretty good.
I mean,
and that's okay, that's good.
Yeah, like, generally speaking, like Dustin said, ours, for the most part, we've been okay, like on a very, very personal level, but still, like, it fucking wears you down.
Yeah, and that's like, just, like, the therapy thing, where all things in moderation, where I do think there is value in that.
Being worn down?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think empathizing with the rest of people.
That, okay, yes, okay. That thing specifically. That
empathy
like,
is healthy.
I think if you distance yourself from it so much that like, all right, well, you know, it didn't really affect me that directly, so I'm kind of over it, then you're not going to give proper due to the people who are suffering more, and that's what we'll need.
And you're not
like,
going to take it...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you're not going to take it as seriously when it comes to... You'll be the type of person who's like, well, I'm vaccinated, so I'm just going to never wear a mask anymore.
Yeah.
And if I spread COVID, I don't care, because at least I didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the kind of consensus we need to build to... Like, we need that level of empathy to build memorials for the people who we did lose and for the people who have survived them. We need that kind of empathy to hopefully continue to build on things like the COVID package that just passed to put out more support there for the people who need it the most. Mm-hmm. And the people who need it the most are the people who have been hit hardest.
Like, You can like just care about people. Like, come on, just care.
A wider spread empathy helps pass legislation because you know, public opinion does matter, even if it's not the be all and end all. But if enough people want something, that can get done.
Yeah,
the screws to them.
and expanding on the what I was saying a little bit ago, if you're finding that you're able to go out and do things and you're still feeling kind of bummed out, that's okay too, and that's normal, because we're also going to be seeing really widespread changes to our lives in the near future.
Social structures, and social norms, all that kind of jazz.
Right. Right now we're kind of used to COVID the way that it is, which is sad, but like having jarring changes in your life can be not always the best thing either, even if it's things that you want or think that you want.
Abrupt change in either direction, positive or negative, isn't the easiest thing to deal with.
Exactly right. Yeah, even it can create more anxiety or more problems. Or yeah,
I will say that like this has given me an insight into people who have suffered through other parts of history that I wasn't privy to personally. Like, I totally get like, have you seen those old photographs of like people in the British subway just kind of like kicking it during German bombing raids? Like, they're just hanging out basically. I totally get that now. Like, like prior to this, I was like, man, look at those brave like balls of steel people. But at this point, it's just
that's
like
all they had. The first like, bombing was it.
The first bombing raid, you lose your shit. The fifth bombing raid, you lose your shit at least a little bit. The 30th bombing raid, like shit
cares?
Happens.
Yeah,
sometimes bombs fall.
Oh, it's Thursday.
Right. Yeah.
Sirens are going off. Let's get out and go take a can or whatever.
Get underground if you can. Get inside a thing if you can't. And, you know, at some moment, the planes will be done passing.
Think about how we were at the start of COVID. Like, I was grocery shopping like once a month and getting everything I could carry. And I was like afraid to walk to my car and like
I had the wet wipes out. I was like, well, this cart's got to get wiped down, and then these apples, I better polish them individually, so I'm gonna might have breathed on these.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And again, right, that initial point of the panic, because it was also when like even the professionals had less information. Like, like they didn't know how transmissible it was on surfaces, so it was like,
or
I don't know, do your best.
Right, exactly. So we were just, and I'm glad that the reaction, at least for most people, was to be more safe.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know, so you might as well be more conservative about it.
Yeah. But that night of I remember the night of the lockdowns really vividly, like when they started in Michigan, because they were like, all right, we're just going to try to have people not do anything for, I think it was 2 weeks originally.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But I was like, all right, well, I better get some groceries right now. So I went to Meijer at like midnight or whatever, and there were like 40 people lined up with carts full of everything that they could get their hands on.
Right. Toilet paper.
And everybody like, it was like you could cut the tension in the room. Like, everyone was just kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, you just feel the vibes coming off of other people.
Yeah, I know I've talked about this day before, but the day that, like, we shut down at work is so vividly entrenched in my memory. And just the whole feel of it, just that, oh, man. That was... Yeah, just, oh man, that's gonna stay with me, I'm pretty sure, for the rest of my life, because that was such a
definitely
scary day.
It'll be like a where were you on 9/11 type of thing. I mean, not as exact, again, because it wasn't like one moment where a thing happened, but
at least
to it.
Yeah, at least that moment is for me, because that's when it for like, because you that whole, because it was like a Thursday or something like that, so it was like the whole week up to it, like you're hearing more and more coming in, and you're just like, huh? And then all of a sudden it literally, like, at least at like the museum and stuff like that, it literally came to a dead halt. It's like, we have shut down, like, we are not letting people into the museum anymore, like, you are all gonna, like, no one's coming in, just go home after you, like, after you leave and stuff like that. Just the abruptness of it all, people were getting pulled away to go to like emergency meetings during lunch. It was terrifying.
Yeah, and I do hope that, like I said, just people like that there are some positive knock-on effects going forward from the fallout of COVID. Because I do think there were not as many as I wish there were, honestly. But I think there were some positive knock-on effects from the post-9/11 world. Most prominently, I do think that, like, to this day, the American public in general has really still developed like a pretty strong distaste for like wide scale military conflicts. Because I truly believe that like we would have gotten into that if the American public in total, including Trump supporters, had been more open to some kind of open military conflict with like a North Korea and Iran, that we would have gotten that in the Trump administration. But the truth was there just really wasn't an upside to it, even from the people who supported him. Like nobody was, you know, they want to stick it to, you know, racial and ethnic minorities in this country, maybe, but nobody is itching to spend, you know, another few trillion dollars on a war 10,000 miles away or whatever. And that I think is like totally just still a direct result of how needless and pointless and wasteful and hurtful everything in Iraq turned out to be, and like our ongoing, you know, boondoggle in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Like I can't even imagine being a soldier in Afghanistan these days. Like, why are we here? I don't fucking know. Because we're here. Because we're always here. Oh man, the world is crazy.
One good thing to have happened after 9/11.
Yeah. And again, like, that's a thing that like eventually we'll unlearn that lesson.
Yeah.
unless maybe. We like somehow dutifully like those are the kind of things we need to, you know, that we hopefully can imbue on the 20-year-olds of today and the 20-year-olds of 10 years and 20 years from now, is that like, look man, you don't want any part of this.
Really,
it wasn't good.
I will say, internationally, the taste for war has just straight up declined over time as well, especially from first world nations. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if that just continued wide scale.
Yeah, I sure hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope so, basically.
And then other than that, it's going to be the post. And that's the other thing that kind of has been dwelling on me personally, and I still haven't come up with a concrete answer for myself yet. So I'm still just kind of trying to fill my time by doing other stuff, like little projects around here, or trying to make game progress stuff to finally release a thing in the next whenever, hopefully hopefully a couple months. But like and this is how it felt like I felt this way as a child post 9/11, but now it's like weirder because I am just like a grown up. That's right, a bigger child, a
child too,
bigger, stronger, uglier child.
I don't know. Most children are pretty ugly.
Then you're beautiful. Don't even.
But the idea of my role in life after this, it's like, all right, well, what am I going to do? Oh. Probably going to go get another job and sit at a desk and, you know, do nothing for the next 40 years. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to not do that. Odds are it wouldn't be the worst thing. I don't think it was the worst thing before this, but now more than ever, I just would love to do something that is directly beneficial. Cause the jobs I've had before this were fine, but like when you're maintaining websites that vend pre-garbage, it's like, oh, we sell tchotchkes that auto companies give to people when they buy cars. Like I helped sell 10,000 hats that are going to be at a landfill 6 months from now. Hooey. Just like, I don't know. I would love to find a place where I can do something that directly helps people in a way that is meaningful. I would love to work for a nonprofit or start a nonprofit or start a business. And I'm probably not going to do any of those things. I might. I really want to. But, you know, it's you got to take the opportunities you're given, and work is hard. But all that stuff's been running
through. Nonprofits need websites, too.
Yeah, that's true. But all that stuff's just been running through my head. It's like, man, I should do something better. I should take the back half of my life and do something better.
I'm back, and I hearing about you talk about that. So I had been considering for a little bit the idea of starting a nonprofit to wrestle with the Michigan auto insurance laws, because they are a huge problem for anyone that makes under $70,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, everything is, right? Everything is a huge problem for people make under, like, you're not wrong about insurance specifically, but yeah, it's, you know.
Well, that's one of those things that can specifically be legislated out of being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the nature of how the auto insurance business works. Like, I mean, we could model it off of California and it would be less expensive than California then. And it would be a huge boon to, like, Michigan's, you know, everything. Because if people have to, if people could pay one third of what they pay now for their auto insurance, it would open up a ton of money for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I had been considering, is actively looking into what it would take to start the nonprofit to begin to fight that process.
Sure. But yeah, any of that, anything like that, just anything that would be, you know, helpful. Like when we drove up to see you guys at the park the other day, I was just, you know, it's just one more thing. But like, with 75 closed mostly, we got off at 8 Mile and then mm-hmm. drove up like that for a little bit and then drove up the rest of the mile roads. And it still just makes me furious, like to pass through, you know, neighborhoods that like that all this shit has been by design. Like people, mm-hmm. people in power decided that these people don't matter, and we're still living with the consequences of it every day.
Yeah.
That like these neighborhoods are just worse arbitrarily, because people have denied them loans and opportunity
everything.
And
everything.
Just, I'm like, I should do something. I don't know, but yeah, that's. All that stuff. My head's been rattling around with all kinds of shit. But one step's for a step, one step at a time. Tomorrow I'll get a shot and I'll go from there.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully we'll all feel a little bit better, just like in general, as COVID wanes.
For sure. But I think I've just about said my piece personally. So if anyone else wants to share any of their personal anything, go for it. The floor is open. Oh man, I talked the room into silence.
You did.
I mean, yeah. I had talked through my stuff before before my food got here.
Sure.
So
in a little bit of wholesome news, so I've been in a Discord server for up and coming professionals in the entertainment industry for like 5 months or so.
Like us. Hell yeah.
You know, like us.
I mean,
every week or two they do script readings for whoever's, you know, mm-hmm. got a script that they want people
sure.
to
sure you put it in the queue and then
out.
Right.
Yeah, and like people voice them, they'll do the whole nine yards and mm-hmm. whatever, and it's usually a fun thing. But yesterday we get started and the guy that I have cast as one of the main characters on a weekly basis, because he's good at it and he's always there.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling me that he had some friends that were not at all in this industry, not at all in this server, that he had explicitly shown the script to because he thought it was that good, and they all read it together and like in their own script reading and mm-hmm. enjoyed it, and like
that's awesome.
Is just a fucking good feeling.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That, I'm so happy to hear that mm-hmm. fucking rules.
Bunch of people sat down in a room somewhere and read a thing that he wrote and enjoyed it.
Yeah. And right, even that kind of thing, like that's just a good thing, even if nothing comes of it, and it'd be really cool if it did. Like, you made that afternoon cool for them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fucking awesome.
Right. Well, and that's definitely a point of encouragement, too, is that, like...
Exactly.
You created something that people were able to...
Affirmed that I have skill at this thing that I, like, am floundering at.
Yeah,
I mean, right. I've loved all the scripts that you've sent me. I've had such a good time reading those mm-hmm. in the past. I've really enjoyed them.
I've done a lot of edits to them.
Nice.
But they're still not even, like... Not even close to what I want from them.
That shit takes time, though. Like, it's so fucking hard.
I mean, until you're...
That's how I know you're a real artist, is you'll never be satisfied.
Well, and like...
It's not perfect! I want it to be perfect!
I feel that.
And until you're, like, until you're an actual professional at it, and, like... And you know that, like, at this point where it's good enough, and iterating on it further is... only gonna create headaches and, you know, stuff to that effect. Until you get to that point, when you, like, anytime that you make something and you iterate on it because you know it can be improved, that's still growth, because you recognize
mm-hmm.
the room for improvement in what you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And that process never really stops. Like,
no.
Yeah, that's great.
I will never get to a point where I'm like, no, this is it. This is the apex. I'm done with this script. Like,
you will eventually get to a point where you're like, I'm out of time for this script, and this is a deliverable version of it.
Sure. Right. Right. That's kind of what I meant with what I was saying, is you'll reach that point where you go, this is quality an extent that I can't really make it much better than this.
Exactly.
Without
committing. I think that's
you hit diminishing returns. Is what it is.
You hit a point and you're like, I don't know how to make it better at this point. I know that it could be better, things that I don't love about it, but I genuinely don't know how to make them better.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I also think, like I said, I had just mentioned diminishing returns, like the amount of effort for the amount of improvement may be disproportionate. And the amount that you will grow from finding the means to improve it at that point may also not be beneficial. Yeah. So that's another point of you go, this is good. And so ultimately at that point, you would probably need another set of eyes, specifically a professional set of eyes to look at it and review it and go, all right, these are the things you can touch on and improve. And even then they may go, this is where it needs to be.
Yeah, that's the real hope once I keep working at this, is some professional looks at it and does so without, you know, they're not doing it because I paid them to do it. They're doing it because they're interested in the project. And
Yeah, the magic balance there is, Never lose that desire to keep making things better. But then if you land that pitch meeting and you're having the sit down and they're like, all right, so how long did it take you to make these scripts? You're like, 3 weeks. You know, I turn them out. I'm the regular like that because I'm punctual. I'm efficient because, you know, money.
Right. That's what you want. I'll be whatever you want me to do, sir.
Turn around and drop my pants and you can paddle me until you're satisfied.
You can paddle me and I'll call you daddy.
But kind of to build on that and also touch on what I had opened our last podcast with, like, it took me a long time to really sit down and finally write the first thing that I ended up writing. And I mulled over that multiple times and went over it again when I finally released it or self-published it or whatever. And then after rereading it recently, like, I know, like, there's thousands of things I could change with it, but eventually I just had to put my foot down and be like, okay, I just need to step away from this. I need to, like, You just need to say it's done at some point, too. Like, because I could make revisions and additions ad nauseum with any of the things that I've written, and they may be better for it, and they may not be. Like, eventually you just kind of gotta stop and be like, okay, this is done. Which I think it might be equally hard as starting something, honestly. Like, the beginning and the end are, like, finding the stepping on and stepping off points of whatever fucking creative train you're on is not the easiest thing to do. But once you're on it, it's at least a little more even.
Right, you've got inertia at your back at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, through my personal experience in working on whatever creative ventures I'm working on, I found that when you get to a point where, like Lorraine said, where she was like, I gotta just let this go. Like, if you keep trying to revise and add and amend and make changes to something, like, when you're at that point, you're gonna go so far down a rabbit hole that you may end up compromising what you originally created, or possibly you're exhausting energy that could go into a new project, utilizing everything that you now know and your new skills and even story plot points that you may want to integrate. Mm-hmm. You can build all that into a new story or new project, rather than trying to squeeze that into something that is already effectively a finished product.
Yeah. And honestly, that was like the biggest thing that I learned during my more recent reread. Because I think, like I said, God, what is it? Well, the number's a little bit bigger now, but I have, like, 13 full completed works online. Well, 13 and a half, one is still ongoing, that I have worked through for the past 3 years or whatever. or four, whatever. Who cares? Numbers don't matter. But the biggest thing that I noticed in my reread of the first story is that there were just, I was trying to do too many things at one time. And yeah. I've gotten so much better at isolating ideas and really fleshing them out as opposed to being like, oh, well, what about this or that or that? Like, I could have, like, polished that stone until it fucking shone like the sun, or I could use what I learned and moved on to something else to just make them incrementally better. And I would like to think I generally enjoy more of my later stuff than my earlier things, just because of how I've grown as a writer, as a storyteller, and as an idea haver, I guess. Like, being able to really focus in on something and not get too bogged down on it or what else you could make it, I think are really big steps in any creative endeavor. Like, ugh. It's been a process. One that I've gladly taken on because I have genuinely enjoyed it. Like, just like, I had always kind of wanted to like write or tell stories in some way, but I never really got into it until I started writing this first one. I dabbled a little bit. Like, my friends and I had made comics during high school and stuff like that. And I'd tried like my hand at writing before. But it was never in earnest. It was never like, okay, I really want to get a full thing done and out there. And having done that, like I've said, I literally haven't stopped. I have kept going. I wrote today. I'm so grateful that I took that step and I was able to do that because it's brought so much to my life. And seeing other people online enjoy it as well. Like, I'm also a part of a actual Discord with people, and I was invited by one of the people who read my things, and just hearing how excited she is to talk to me about like literally anything is kind of incredible.
Right.
Because of something that I did, like, even if it's not necessarily my stuff, like, we've started talking about more and more things as we like just kind of get on voice chat or whatever, but hearing her enthusiasm as well as some of the other people who have been following my stuff for a few years now is just, it's wild. Cause like, why do you like this shit? It's for me. I wrote all of this for me and you're enjoying it too. That's weird.
It sounds like you're building a cult fandom.
I mean, that is what creation is. You build something that you want to see. And if you build it so that you do want to see it, there's are people who will also want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're, no one is so special that they are the only person who would enjoy a thing.
God knows I'm not. But
So it's something that I've like seen on like YouTube, seen YouTube content creators say is like, create the content that you wanna see, that you wanna enjoy, and then people are gonna be more likely to come and watch it. And it's the same thing with writing and everything else, is make something you enjoy. And people are going to be drawn to it because there's, you know, there's passion and desire to it.
Enthusiasm.
Right. Yeah, enthusiasm.
You can tell someone cares.
Right. It's not just like some generic pumped out bullshit. It's got some love and attention given to it.
Yeah, man. I love it. That was great. I just loved it. Yeah. I just sat here listening to you guys, and that just made me happy. So thank you. Thank you, Wade, for spinning it up, and thank you, Lorraine, for kind of
elaborating. I actually have my own pivot off that a little bit.
All right.
So, Dustin, you remember the Inuyasha-like card game I was building that I had you try? So I hadn't touched it in a while because I had kind of been at a block of like, what can I do to make this make more sense? Cause it was definitely like, there was some nonsense to it.
Yeah.
And so ultimately I thought about it and I was like, well, I'm going to change my archetype design philosophy and make that have an impact on it. So I reworked two whole archetypes and got them all designed, and I like how they look. Now I just need to print them out and test them. And then see how they go. And if it works, then I'll be able to actually get the engine going and put some actual hours into designing stuff and then have multiple things to test.
Yeah. Ooh, and then we'll all be vaccinated. we can get together and actually fucking try it out.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's been reviewing the rules as I designed them, reviewing the card design as I had done previously. Because I was kind of like leaning into everything gets everything, and but archetypes get a stronger version of everything. Like everything got a lot of everything is kind of what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I changed it to each archetype gets their own thing and then a little bit of something or a few other things. So like you can put like a splash of debuff in a deck that has all buffs. You could put a splash of buffs in a debuff deck, like those kinds of things, you know, just trying to make it make more sense. And then also changing the rules to make it go a little quicker.
Sure.
You know, and I like where it's landed so far, and I just gotta test it.
I dig that. That sounds great. And yeah, I'll look forward to trying that out once you've got another iteration to fuck around with. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to working on Gambit the board game more.
Yeah.
Push that product out.
I do some more.
I've been thinking about
the movie, the game.
I was just thinking about that this week for like the first time in a while. I was like, yeah, we should totally do some more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I like tabletop game design, whether it's card game.
Yeah,
or
it's
board
fun.
Game.
And it's relatively low, like, overhead. Like, it's very easy to just, like, pull a thing out and scribble on it to change it. And then, like, there's just a simplicity to all that is really enticing.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's great. Honestly, I think I'll share one last little thing, and then we'll call it a show, since everybody else is talking about making stuff. And I do eventually want to make this thing.
I'm going to have one more thing to add after you, Dustin.
No, you first.
No, Lane. You go. I just talked.
Okay, well, I may or may not release a YouTube video of some kind at some point. It's a thing,
like,
I think
script written content.
Yeah, it's a thing I've been thinking about doing for a while, just because I've like,
damn,
like,
I gotta get on that banner then, fuck.
Well, whatever. It's I'm like 10% through one script, so
nice.
I wouldn't worry too much about
still.
It
still,
but it's like having those conversations, basically what you just said, mm-hmm. like to the room, like having those conversations with you of just wanting to find something that I can release on the regular that is creative,
mm-hmm.
on the more on the regular than a video game that we spend a number of years like iterating on.
No,
I just want an outlet
idea.
Like that.
Yeah.
So I have part of a script written for a thing, and they'll probably all be somewhere on the like the intersection of informative and just like my fucking opinion on shit. But I'll say if I'm just putting it out there to hope that I actually get myself over the finish line to finish it. But if I finish it up, it's got a little of everything. It's got Nazis, it's got Henry Ford, it's got
right?
fancy awards. There's like so be on the lookout. I might make a contents, and then I
can't wait for this content.
But I'll definitely let Lorraine see the script first before I do anything. Like once I have a first draft, I'll let you look at
Yike.
It.
I've had thoughts about doing like a YouTube channel for a while, but
I'll tell you what, Wade. If I do this and I actually do it, maybe we can collaborate and make some stuff.
I'd like, comment, and subscribe.
I gotta get
channel.
My own ass off the bench first, and then maybe we'll go from there.
Right.
But,
I've always found that it is easier to motivate yourself when you're collaborating with mm-hmm. someone else, but also
yeah,
that is
for sure.
It's really hard to do anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, it's group project syndrome a little bit at that point,
yeah,
too.
And this, I really have to decide also how deep I'm going to go in research-wise. Because mm-hmm. when I say research right now, so far it's just been like a ton of typing things into Google.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a chance that after I get vaccinated, I might pop into the library at the Henry Ford. It has some resources that I might want to pull out of a...
It's not open to the public right now.
Well, never mind.
Once it's... because like just COVID. Like, you can't get into the reading room
uh-huh.
right now. But...
Okay.
Eventually.
Yeah. There's some documents that might want to requisition.
Google mostly handles the...
Yeah, you're not wrong. It totally
but it's
does.
Cool to see the physical fucking things, though. Like, you can, like, the Benson Ford Research Center over on the museum campus, like, you can just, like, pull, like, actual fucking documents or old-ass books, like, and they will just bring them to you and you can see them, like, in person. It's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
It's
but
a very
yeah,
cool
so
facility.
Be on the lookout for that. And yeah, if it does work out and I actually finish a thing, then yeah, I'll be... We can have a couple conversations, Wade. Hopefully it'll... But I hope...
I'd be so into that.
Yeah, I hope I get something done.
I mean, we have
done,
the setup for it.
My loose timeline is end of May, but we'll see. Like I said, it's going to just... it'll be the first time I've done any of this before.
Yeah.
Like, the closest I've come is when we recorded that video for Kickstarter years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I wrote a script for that, and we scripted it out and acted it, and I edited it all together. And this will be similar to that. I don't think I'll be on camera, really, because I don't want to, like, vlog. Like, I don't need to see my face that much. Like, I'm not opposed to ever putting my face in a video, but I don't want most of the content in a video to be my stupid face.
Just do it the style that a bunch of YouTubers do, where like it's you, but it's an animated caricature of you.
Become a VTuber, Dustin. Become a VTuber.
We'll see. More annoying.
We'll see.
My favorite is when you take a still picture of yourself and then animate expressions like over it.
Game theory guy.
Do a stock photo set of yourself, giving a thumbs up. Me giving a thumbs down.
Mm-hmm. No, like you giving a thumbs up with googly eyes.
I mean, realistically, it's like, you know, just do a video essay.
It'll be similar to that. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot.
Video essays get
like
hell of views.
Yeah, that's
good video essays.
That's in the neighborhood of what I'll be putting out. Hopefully,
get a haircut, put a shirt on, and put yourself on camera. In the end, you'll be thankful.
Do it, you coward.
It doesn't have to be nonstop. Just, you know, here and there, so people can see the pretty face.
This Fair is the enough. Moneymaker.
But anyway, yeah, I'll leave that out there in the ether and hope that I can actually deliver on it. And then I'm going to kick it to Lorraine. Uh-oh. And then we're going to call it a show.
Mostly, I just wanted, maybe talk about the most recent thing that I've been posting. So last year, like, my writing process last year was weird. I went to some strange places in the things that I was writing. But one of the things was actually taking our group and writing them into a story, like using us, the vast majority of us as characters. And that is what I'm currently posting right now. I have changed everyone's name, so you don't have to worry about that.
Damn.
But
wasn't worried.
It was a very lazy change, though. So, like, if anyone somehow finds it...
You changed Brian to Byron, didn't you?
No,
Brian.
I didn't, actually.
It's all just first letters, right?
It's first letters. Yeah. It was a very
None
lazy
of them
change.
Quite that exact.
No. But it actually has been getting a lot of very positive feedback in regards to the characters specifically. And I the only reason I wrote it is because I missed everybody. So it was just it's a fun little dumb thing. It gets sad at some points, but it has a happy ending.
I've been slowly reading through it. I'm at the point where I think it's about it at its darkest.
What kind of monstrous things are we getting into?
I really want to read this now.
I can either send the finished thing or if... We can talk afterwards. I'm not gonna. Nobody wants to know where this shit lives.
I just want to see the arc where Phil goes down the deep dark conspiracy theory rabbit hole and then becomes radicalized as a white supremacist.
That's not what happens.
Comes out the other side of full QAnon.
Weird enough, that happens to Amanda, but
it comes out that Phil is QAnon.
On the surface, we are not interesting enough to, you know, populate a story beat, a series of story beats. I'm curious, just what.
Yeah,
where the drama's
there you go. I do. I guess I haven't gotten to the actual end, so I don't know. But it would be quite the turn if it was just like a chick tract. Like if it was secretly just like this incredibly intense, stupid morality play. Like
it's not, Dustin. Okay. I can assure you that.
But also, maybe it could be.
You don't know. Maybe someone will interpret it as that. But
anyway.
But one of the funnier consequences of that is the one friend of mine who I'm in a Discord with now has been looking into more of my old stuff, specifically a lot of the comics that I made very early on. And because they're all like of a similar vein. They were me and my friends in high school. And then later, like Dustin and more people just doing dumb shit. And I don't know. It was kind of a weird full circle. That's all.
I thought you were just going to say, like, these characters are so lifelike. How do you do it? I was
very upfront with, like, hey, right. Like, I'm essentially writing fan fiction of my friend
group. That's right. I've taxidermied my friends via text. And
essentially.
Stuffed them into the internet.
Uh-huh.
Does one of them speak in Wingdings?
No.
How many chaotic, evil to neutral things do I do?
I'd say a fair amount. It's adequate. I don't know. There are specifically with you, Brian, I feel like I hit you pretty well in a few spots. Like,
see, like now you say stuff like that, and you're gonna like, Brian, you're like peeling back an onion that like I don't.
All right.
It's just a lot.
I don't know. There's a few points where I feel like I captured you fairly well.
But yeah, I feel like I wouldn't be brave enough to write a thing based on people and then to say, I think I got you pretty well. I'm not saying you didn't. I'm just saying that I'm a coward.
Being said by, that I wrote, I could hear it coming out of like Brian's of mouth. No, it's not.
Your rants are legendary.
They are.
You can't reproduce that. That's pure Brian.
I do not. I'm a coward in that regard. I do not have the courage to write a Brian rant off the top of my head. I am not qualified.
I couldn't write it. It's all ad lib.
Well, exactly.
I could probably write it, but I would have to think about it for like an hour to get there.
Yes.
And you would also need consultation.
I would need a therapist after that hour immediately.
And which weapon makes you angrier, crimson or
threat level?
Crimson, undoubtedly. And that's only because it's affected me more recently.
God, I wish I could pair crimson and threat level and just fuck Brian's mind.
1v1 me with that loadout.
I wish I could. They're both kinetic, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh boy. That's
anyway.
I'll just hot swap. It's fine.
Thank you for sharing, Lorraine.
I figured I should fess up about that eventually.
Just be honest about your like self.
We got a bestseller list.
Is there a different word for
someone ends up coming to like coming to a place that we're at, being like, "Is this everyone?" And we're like, "So what the fuck?"
So the funnier thing is like. When I'm talking about this particular story in the Discord chat, we are using the story names. So I do censor myself in that regard. But she does know who Dustin is because I've mentioned Dustin's name and other things on.
I live here.
You do. Also, your PSN name is Dustin M. And I mentioned that in the one picture, the Destiny picture that I had posted. So you're a known quantity, but. And I don't know.
Didn't have
it's
the foresight to have a fake pseudonym when he's online.
It's just funny that I'm able to better censor myself with the actual like the fake names that I gave everyone and know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The last thing I was going to ask you before I sign off here is there a different term for like self-insert if the whole cast of characters is based on real people?
I mean, I've just called it self-insert.
Okay.
Because like, I am in the story too. Like. Uh-huh. I am a character. It's not like
literally
the protagonist.
I'm a there's because it is third person and it does kind of follow other people. It's not just me. I write third and first. I will never write second unless there's a gun to my head. But I'm a. I would say the vast majority of us are. It's a collective. It's an ensemble cast, if you will.
I only write in the sixth person.
You monster.
All of my narratives are refracted through some form of crystal.
I only write through the fifth dimension. So
all of my writing is in tarot readings.
If it doesn't pertain time, it doesn't matter.
Time is right, relative.
All of my poems can only be read if they're printed like backwards onto a vase and then like held up to a light on the sixth day of June. And
the solstice happens at its zenith, then you can see the words written on the inside of the vase and read my prose for 5 minutes.
That's right.
Thank God.
I know. No, it's bad prose. I'm not a poet.
Anyway,
it's not prose. It's prose.
Right, I'm not either.
I think we're gonna call it a show, but that was a lot of fun. It brought me from contemplative to like I'm back in the like.
Welcome to a dose of serotonin.
Nice little mood right now. Yeah, you guys are put a pep in my step.
Woo!
I'm feeling okay too. I'm gonna get a few cigarettes.
I was getting crushed by a meteor, and now I'm like, yeah, I could do Arby's.
I could get crushed by some Arby's.
I was thinking about how much I would have to pay to buy a Mack truck and then wire it to auto accelerate so I could stand in front of it and not have anyone be able to blame but myself.
Glance is at the non-existent wristwatch on my hand. I could do Arby's.
No, it's like, you know, hey, man, if I had the money, I'd be the most fucking weird mad scientist type person. Jesus.
Same.
Maybe it's for the best. Probably not, but maybe it's for the best.
Possibly.
Yeah,
we should. It's a, I mean, like, also, you know, like, because I was talking about, like, you know, I want to put monster truck lift and tires on a VW Bug.
Indeed.
It beeps in, like, bass.
You'd probably flip that thing if you hit the gas too hard coming off of a stoplight.
That's the point!
I mean, I would be, I would love to see that. You're right.
So, because like you got to build a really good roll cage because you're gonna roll. That's the point of the whole thing. It's like it's the will it float. That's just
there you go.
That's my life. Is that kind of shit?
Will it float?
You know?
Will
it boat?
Will it boat?
Brian's gonna start his own channel. It's gonna be great.
God.
All right. Yeah. With that, we'll return with. Thoughts on all manner of things. We'll return with weird projects of varying
degrees of insanity.
Mediums, I suspect. right. But until then, thank you guys for just sitting down and having a conversation with me. Appreciate it.
Dustin, here's my last thought. If we collaborate on this YouTube thing, one of us is animated and the other one is live action.
All right. That's fair.
Poppin style. I like it.
We'll figure it out.
Frustrating.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah, I don't have any opposition to that.
We'll burn that bridge when we get there.
Right on. All right. Well, until our Who Framed Roger Rabbit future. We'll see you.
Crash Bandicoot waifu future.
We'll see you later, Internet. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks with something.
Bye.
Okay, Internet. I still hate you.